Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. We're talking today about women's relationships in the workplace. You know, we often hear that women are mean to each other. They're jealous, two-faced, they're insecure, they're competitive to the point where they undermine other women's self-confidence and accomplishments. Well, my guest today says during her research for the new book she co-wrote with her husband, the women they interviewed often said, "Hey, I get along fine with guys, but I hate working with women." One woman openly told the authors that she sabotaged the careers of three female managers for the exact same behavior she tolerated from two male managers. So what's going on here? Do we as women make workplace relationships more difficult than they need to be? Are we going into the workforce expecting to be stereotyped, expecting to find gender bias? Or is the issue that women have double standards and different expectations when it comes to working with female versus male colleagues? Well, my guest says yes, 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 yes to double standards. Different expectations are definitely part of the problem, but it actually goes much deeper than that. Andrea Kramer is my guest. She's married to Alton Harris. They're both attorneys, and together they've tackled gender bias in the workplace for decades. They speak, write, and conduct workshops across the country and have been featured in the New York Times, Harvard Business Review, Forbes, and many other publications. Andrea Kramer, or Andy as she likes to be called, joined me to share insights from their latest book. It's Not You, It's the Workplace, Women's Conflict at Work and the Bias That Built It. And we begin our conversation today with a little of Andy's background and how she built a dynamic career in communications based around gender bias and the stereotypes that spin from that. Here's Andy Kramer.
I started my legal practice at a tiny little law firm where they couldn't have cared if you were purple polka dotted. If you did a good job, everybody wanted you on their projects. And then I went to a big firm, and what I found at big firms is that because they don't know you, they rely on the stereotypes and the biases that they have about women and men and work and families and leaders. And the expectation was that, well, if you're a girl, then somehow you probably aren't as ambitious or as competent as the men, which is not the case for most women and clearly was not the case for me. And I was surprised by that. I hadn't expected that. What I found, though, was then I fast forward a few years, I was on our management committee and then our compensation committee, and what I found was that women would be very modest and deferential about their successes. And the men would talk about how great they were and what a wonderful job they did and how they saved the client gazillions of dollars. And the woman who had came up with the solution to the problem would be writing about the team she was on. And not that there's anything wrong with writing about your team, but in a self-evaluation, you're supposed to be evaluating yourself. Mm-hmm. And so the men were making a lot more money than the women. And that's what started me speaking and writing about communication differences that women and men experience primarily because of gender stereotypes and biases.
Right. You talk about gendered workplaces. Let's just explain what you mean by gendered workplace before we dive into that not being the real problem gender differences are.
Well, the problem really is a gendered workplace, which is that workplaces are predominantly run by men. Men hold the senior positions in most, not all obviously, but many of our organizations. And those organizations have masculine values, culture, and expectations. And so women are when we join an organization, very often, we're the out-group. We're not part of the boys that are in the in-group, the boys' club. And even in organizations that don't have the traditional boys' club where the guys all hang out together and they ostracize the women, that there are male values and expectations. For example, most organizations, senior leaders believe that there's a separation between work and your personal life. Well, for so many women, that's just not the case because they have family responsibilities, many more responsibilities if they have children than their husbands very often have. And so in a gendered workplace, the women, because we're in the out group, there's less opportunities for us. We're not considered. We're not dragged along. We don't get the career-enhancing opportunities the same way that men do. And so that's what creates the conflict that women can have at work, mm-hmm. because we know there's limited spots. And if I've got it, then there's no room for you, Vicki.
Right, right. You write that gender's not the whole story. Stereotypes that women face in working with people whose IDs are different to their own, for example, different race, age, ethnicity, even parental status. Talk to us about that, if you would, and how that plays into.
Sure. Very often, women are, you know, as I said, we're in the out group very often in business, but our out group can also be subdivided into other little out groups. And when we have women with different social identities, the social scientists refer to that as intersectionality. We come to the workplace with stereotypes and biases about us, in addition to the fact that we're women, that affects the way we're perceived and the opportunities that are made available to us in the workplace. And so in addressing the women's conflict at work, what we found is that, yes, it's the bias that built it, but it's not just gender bias. It can also be bias because you're black and I'm white, or you're Asian and I'm Latina, or you're LGBTQ and I'm not. And so what we did is we divided up a big part of the book between these different intersectionalities, because they bring with them different stereotypes, different biases, and different opportunities for conflict. But the gendered workplace is really what starts off and creates much of the controversy that women face in the workplace.
Right. You also talk about generational differences. And, you know, I just want to share some stats here that you have in your book, because I was quite shocked about this. You say 37% of women with successful careers help with children's homework, while only 9% of men do. We're talking here women with successful careers. 51% of these wives take time off work if a child is sick. Again, only 9% of men. 45% of these wives clean the house. Again, only 9% of the men. And the list goes on. It really, really surprises me in this day and age. Are we not setting our expectations high enough?
Well, are we not setting our expectations high enough for our partners to help us, whether it's a husband or
Exactly.
We're not going to be able to change all of the biases in the workplace when the home life doesn't change. And so that's obviously an important place where things need to change too. It becomes so complicated because many of the men who are senior leaders in organizations in the United States, they have stay-at-home wives. And so they don't know how their shoes get polished or how their suits get cleaned or why they always have a clean
shirt. Right. They have those traditional roles where, you know, woman takes care of and supports his career, basically.
Exactly. And senior women although there are some that do have stay-at-home partners, most of them don't. And so that's why the expectation and assumption that the work sphere and the home sphere are two separate things might work fine for most men in senior leadership positions, but they don't work for women. I'll give you an example. In our marriage, Al is older than I am, and he had a more flexible schedule when our daughter was little. And so we would ask the school that if she was sick, if they would give him a call instead of me. And they would never call him. They would always call me.
That's really interesting because I'm a baby boomer, so I'm not a spring chicken here. But in my family, my generation, both my brother stayed at home with his kids and my brother-in-law stayed at home with their kids. So I'm always surprised when I hear about these more traditional roles. I kind of assume everybody's moved into the 21st century with us. But it's not the case. And it, you know, looking at these details in your book, you went to meticulous lengths to make sure you weren't biased in your research, gone through studies and personal examples and stories from people. How long did it take to put this book together and do all the research for it?
Probably about 2 years. Yeah. And we were both, Al and I have collaborated for decades on not just gender stuff, but professional writing as well. And so one of us will start a first draft, the other one will take it. We go get back and forth. By the time we're done, we don't know who wrote what, who did the first draft. We both do the research. We've had research assistants. We've had a lot of help, and we've interviewed hundreds of women and men. And we wanted to, as with our first book, we wanted to be sure that the information that we had was not the world according to us, but the world according to the world as best as we could figure it out.
Right. So moving on from keeping in line with general differences, but I want to talk about millennials in specific right now, because I know several people who've actually crafted careers where they literally travel around the country consulting with organizations on, quote, how to handle millennials, unquote. When you were doing your research, did you find significant difference? Did you find they were having different reactions to other generations, or that they are being treated differently to other generations?
Well, there clearly are some differences. For example, the younger workers are much more comfortable dealing with the computer and social media. If you ask a millennial to call somebody on the phone, they might think that you asked them to sprout a fourth head. You want me to call them? You know, so there is some of that, which is blown out of proportion in many situations.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of the stereotypes about young workers are negative, and a lot of the stereotypes about older women are negative. And so we've got, there's only a sweet spot of 10-year period when as women we're okay, basically. So we have to overcome that, and a lot of that has to do with understanding where the other person is coming from and having conversations, which is really the key of both our first book and It's Not You, It's the Workplace, which is we have to have conversations, we have to talk about things, and that makes all the difference in the world.
Right. So let's look at this then. How does an older woman, if she's looking for a promotion or she's looking for a new job and she's sitting there and she knows that the person doing the interviewing is thinking, you know, she's old enough to be my mom or my grandmother.
Right.
How do they compensate for that? Because they also bring with them a wealth of knowledge and experience.
Well, that's a, yes, you've touched on an important point. When a younger person is doing the evaluating, older women are the biggest group of employees wannabe employees are really women over 40, 45, who find it very, very difficult, sometimes impossible, to get a new position. And they are being evaluated by younger people who do look at them and think that they're yesterday's news. One of the things that she needs to do is she needs to be prepared to be confident about and understand technology, because the assumption is that women over 45 just don't know how to handle the computers. And that's an important thing to make certain that she is able to talk the talk. I had a woman reach out to me who said that she's an architect, and she couldn't get an architect job when she moved across the country when she got remarried on a bet. And she was interviewing for sort of mid-level management jobs, and she still couldn't get them. And one of the most poignant things she told me is that she walked in to the last interview. She'd made it all the way up to the senior CEO, and he was very young, and he looked at her and he said, "So what are your what are the apps you use on your phone the most?" And as if that had anything to do
right
the job interview. And it was, she said it went downhill from there, because it was clear he just didn't want to give her the time of day. So it is hard for women to re-enter the workforce, and older women to re-enter the workforce. And there are a lot of negative stereotypes about older workers, a lot of negative stereotypes about younger workers. And we really need to understand that stereotypes are just that. They're just have no bearing on any individual person.
Right, because the flip side of that is that some older women have been working on computers longer than the interviewer has been alive.
Exactly.
So there comes the experience, etc. So I'm wondering, if we look at gender bias as a whole, does it vary? Does it tend to vary by industry?
Well, we would have thought that there might be, and there may be some slight variation by industry or geographic region. But the reality is that we work with physicians, we work with lawyers, we work with accountants, we work with people in the financial services industry, people in insurance, people in sales jobs, engineering firms, and the issues are the same no matter what the profession, unfortunately.
Okay, and does that tend to go across country? Because I know you work all over the country. Are there certain, cities? We kind of expect big cities to be more progressive, but I know from experience that's not always necessarily true.
Yes, there may be some pockets where it's harder. LGBTQ women tell us that being in a rural area or away from a big city is much harder for them.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's fairly constant across the country.
Yeah. So, and I was going through the book, I was reminded of an interview I saw with the current vice president, who's publicly stated that he won't meet with women alone. He does not. It's well known, apparently. It's his rule. He does not meet alone with women. He always has a staffer with him. I'm kind of speechless, as you can tell. I'm kind of speechless by that attitude. But I'm wondering how you see it and what kind of message that is sending at large.
Well, it's fondly referred to as the Pence rule, but the reality is that that was created many years ago from the evangelical Christian movement. It turns out that the problem with a rule that says I'm not going to meet with any woman unless there's somebody else around means that women lose out on valuable and critically important mentorship and career opportunities. And so what it does is it penalizes women prevents them from succeeding and reaching their dreams. And that's shameful. It's also been applied, interestingly, in some horrifying ways, where I believe it was a police chief or somebody in a town refused to have as a partner in his squad car a woman.
Huh. Interesting.
So
interesting that they don't even trust themselves. That's the way I look at it.
Right, as if somehow it's the exactly. Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this is a problem, and we are seeing more of it.
More of it. That's not good. So let's say I'm a manager, or even an employee, because a lot of these movements start at the front line. If I see this happening in my department, if I see these stereotypes coming to the front and gender bias, how do I begin to make a change?
Well, one of the things is that women by ourselves are not going to be able to make the change. We need the men, and we need policies at the organizations to change as well, ultimately, to make real change. But you're a woman, and you show up for work, whether you're, and you try to talk to a senior manager. You try to make sure that women are getting the same opportunities. Organizations need to strip out of their policies and procedures the discretion that allows somebody to say, well, he's a self-starter, but she's too aggressive,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we need to, that's really what we need to deal with,
okay.
is start a conversation, talk about how it women should be given the same opportunities. It's not going to happen overnight, and pointing fingers at somebody and saying you're biased is not going to make them stop being biased.
Right. And I think I want to add to that, because we have a lot of conversations going on in this country right now, and they're just conversations. We need to take an action step, make sure an action step's attached to that conversation at some point, because
right.
otherwise we just keep talking around in circles and nothing changes. So you've been doing this work a really long time. Did anything surprise you when you were doing the research for this book?
Well, I think that what surprised me is how much harder black women and women of color have it than white women. I knew it was harder. We have a lot of friends who are women of color, men of color, and we know that their workplace situations have been harder than ours. But I didn't realize how staggeringly much harder it is for them. And so one of the things that I would recommend for people is to find somebody who doesn't look like you and take them under your wing and help them in their careers, because it's going to help them, but it's also going to help you. You're going to learn more about them. You're going to learn about ways of dealing with the world. And so that's really the biggest thing that I think I took away from it, which is we spend too much time hanging around with people who look like us. We need to expand, put our efforts where our expectations for fear
right.
are.
Right. So let's end this on a positive note. Where are you hopeful?
Okay. Well, I'm hopeful because a lot of women who had said that they believed that women were hard and nasty and difficult to deal with started our book thinking, you know, they're never going to convince me. I know women are. And then by the time they're finished, they're like, well, you know what? I really didn't give her a chance. Or she was evil, but there's six guys that I reported to who are evil too, and I didn't hold them up as if all men were evil. And so I think that getting the information out is a hopeful first step. And so having the opportunity to talk with you is very important.
Right. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Andy. The book is called It's Not You, It's the Workplace. It's by Andrea Kramer and Alton Harris, and you can find out more about them and their work at andyandal.com. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Andy?
Well, I guess what I would like to say is keep trying, because sometimes perfection is overrated. We very often will be afraid to make a move or do something if we don't think we're going to get it right. And difficult conversations about conflicts are not going to be perfect the first time. So give it a try. Keep at it. It makes a big difference.
That sounds good. And I think we have to trust ourselves. And if we stop justifying every action, we'll maybe make some progress.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it, Andy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.